Father, thank you for this day that we can come into this place together. Father, thank you that you are a great and gracious God. And Father, thank you that this morning we can sing together, we can read your word together, we can, Father, just be in your presence together. And so, God, as we talk this morning about walking alongside grieving people, I pray that your presence will be rich in this place and that we'll learn together in Jesus' name. Amen. It had been more than a year since his son had died very tragically. His son had committed suicide by hanging himself. And I met him by chance, and we started talking, and so we said, let's have coffee, and we sat down, and we had coffee, and after we had exchanged the pleasantries, I wanted to know how he was doing. So I looked him in the eye and said very pastorally, how are you hanging in there? Yeah, ooh. The rest of you will get it in about 5 minutes, okay? It's not a good thing to say to a guy whose son has hung himself. Yeah, you just got it. There we go. But listen, it was an innocent faux pas for me, but it was a crushing reminder for him. Here's the truth. The truth is, when it comes to comforting those who are grieving, often we don't know what to do or say. And part of the reason for that is we live in a culture that avoids pain and grief at all cost. And so when grief and pain are staring us in the face, we're not sure what to do or what to say. Well, today in part three of our mini-series on grief, I want to teach us. This is more teaching today than preaching. I want to teach us about some things we should not say and some things we should do and say as we walk alongside people that are grieving. In week one, we looked at the whole idea, how can we grieve well if we're a grieving person? And then we looked at a couple of weeks ago, the whole idea of hope and grief, the hope we can have while we grieve. And again today, I just want us to look at what are some things we should not say and some things we should do and say as we walk alongside those who are grieving. So let's start with the not. What are some things you should not say to a grieving person? Here's the first one. Now, these are statements, by the way, I've heard said or I say myself. So here's the first one. I know how you feel. Actually, I don't. When we hear another person's loss, we often try to emphasize with their loss by sharing our own grief or loss stories. And while you may have journeyed through grief yourself before, and while your situation might even be similar to another person's, it's the relationship that makes each situation so vastly unique. You may have lost your dad, but you didn't lose their dad. You may have lost your spouse, but you didn't lose their spouse. Your experience of grief makes you an expert on your grief, not someone else's. It's the relationship with the person who passed away that makes grief an overwhelming personal experience. Thus, the truth is, I don't know how you're feeling. A better thing for me to say would be, I can't imagine how you're feeling. Here's the second thing. You may have heard this one. Everything happens for a reason. When you say something like that to a grieving person, what they hear is, God planned for my loved one to die. Or, God gave my loved one that cancer that killed him or her. Yes, everything probably does happen for a reason, but it doesn't mean the reason is good or it's God's will. Not everything that happens in your life is God's will. Right? What do we pray in the Lord's Prayer? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. That means we're praying for God's will to be done, meaning his will isn't always done. Just open up and read the newspaper and you can see that. And also, not everything that happens in your life is good. Romans 8:28 is a very popular Bible verse. It says this, and we know that those who love God, For those who love God, all things work together for good. For those who are called according to His purpose. Notice that? All things work together for good. Not all things are good. Some things that happen in your life are bad, even evil. God can work good out of those things, but in themselves, those things are not good. I read a statement recently that's really good advice for us when we're talking to a grieving person. Here's the statement. You should never utter something about God that you can't say while standing before the gates of Auschwitz. Let me say that again. You should never utter something about God that you can't say while standing before the gates of Auschwitz. That's good advice. Here's another one. God wanted another angel. I actually heard that said at a funeral where a child had died. Someone went up to one of the child's parents and said, God wanted another angel. Have you ever thought about that? The implication of that statement is, God took your child from you because He needed another angel in heaven. You know that's not how angels work, right? People don't turn into angels when they die. They remain people. So just don't say that. It's dumb. It's incorrect. It's insensitive. And if you say that to someone who's lost a child and you get punched in the face, you deserve it. Here's another one. Well, at least. You ever said that? Pretty much anything that starts with, well, at least, is not good. Well, at least he didn't suffer. Well, at least you know where she is. Well, at least you still have your other children. All those statements, you notice what they do? They minimize a person's loss. And they imply the grieving person should look on the bright side instead of being so sad. Do you see that happening there? So here's the deal. When one of those at least statements come into your mind, filter it. Think it, don't say it. Here's another one. He wouldn't want you to be so sad. First of all, let's be clear. When I die, I want someone to cry, okay? Sil, will you cry? She will. Good. At least somebody will. She might cry while she mourns around Europe, but at least she'll cry, right? Secondly, the problem with that statement, he wouldn't want you to be sad, is there's an implied second half. And the implied second half unintentionally dismisses or diminishes the person's grief. Here's the implied second half of that statement. So stop feeling so sad. Or stop feeling so bad. At least you had her for as long as you did, so stop feeling so bad. He died doing something he loved, so stop feeling so bad. You can always have another child, so stop feeling so bad. If a grieving person cringes or feels upset when you try to comfort them, it's because they hear the second half of the statement even though you didn't say it out loud. Now, you mean well. You're trying to comfort a grieving person. You're trying to take their pain away. What we don't understand is in trying to take a person's pain away, we're actually unintentionally minimizing their grief. If you want to comfort a grieving person, you need to assure the reality of their loss is not diminished or minimized. You need to assure they feel heard in their pain. And while we can't take someone's pain from them, what we can do is journey with them through their grief and their sorrow. Here's another one. I do this all the time. How are you doing? You ever ask a grieving person that? I do it all the time. How are you doing? When a grieving person hears, "How are you doing?" they generally assume that the person asking that question wants to hear that they're getting better and better. So they usually answer, "I'm fine, I'm okay, I'm doing good," rather than really communicating how they're feeling. There's other reasons grieving persons answer that way as well. One is they don't sense that you really want to know how they're doing. You're just being polite. Or they themselves might not know how they're doing. If you're grieving, you're a mess. You might not be able to say how you're doing. Or maybe they don't know you well enough to tell you. Or maybe they're just tired of talking about how they're doing. One grieving person said this: "Picture the worst thing that has ever happened to you. Got it? Now try to put it in a sentence. Now say it aloud several times a day. Does your head hurt? Do you feel sad?" Here's another one. I say this too a lot. "Is there anything I or we can do for you? Is there anything I or we can do for you?" When you ask that question, often the grieving person is simply too overwhelmed by everything, so they simply answer, "No, I'm fine, thanks." And when you think about it, that question creates additional work for a person who is grieving. They've got to now think about what they need, and then they've got to spend more energy trying to figure out what they want you to do off that list. One grieving person said it this way: "I wish people had understood that when they said things like, 'We are here for you, whatever you need, just ask,' it wasn't helpful. Many days I didn't know what I needed help with. I just felt alone and like I was drowning. Offering help but not taking initiative practically pushes the responsibility onto the person who is grieving and adds yet another burden." Here's what I found. Generally speaking, grieving people are not going to call you if they need something. They need you to figure out what they need and then just go do it. Mow the lawn, get the groceries, take care of the kids. Now, that's all a good segue to the other half of the sermon, which is, what are some things we should do or say around a grieving person? Here's the first one. Probably the most important, actually. Just be there. Just be there. I don't know if you know the story of Job in the Old Testament. Job had a few really, really bad days. All his livestock were killed, all his servants were murdered, and his children all died. And he's a mess. And some friends come to console him. Job chapter 2, verse 11 says this: "Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that had come upon him, they came, each from his own place. They made an appointment together to come to show him sympathy and comfort him. And when they saw him from a distance, they did not recognize him. And they raised their voices and wept, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads toward heaven. And they sat with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great." After Job lost his family, he's a mess. His friends don't even recognize him. And they come and they mourn with him. And for 7 days, they said absolutely nothing. They just sat and they grieved with him. And their presence and their silence would have been a gift to Job. And it's when his friends actually started talking that they really messed things up, because they tried to explain everything to Job. What Job wanted was their presence. Know this: your presence alone can be holy and healing. 25 years ago, last November, a friend of mine, Scott Bailey, he's the executive director at Camp Kwanos, his wife Julie was in a terrible accident on the Malahat. She ended up in ICU, and every day, every other day, I would just go up with Scott and his family and sit in the ICU waiting room and just sit there, pray, listen. Nothing spectacular. I just thought I was being a friend. Well, last November, Scott sent me this text. It says this: "Hi, Steve. 25 years ago on November 30th, Julie was in that horrible head-on with a truck at the top of the Malahat. I remember you coming to visit many times. I was very thankful for all your support and prayers. 25 years later, what Scott remembers is the fact that I was there for him. Never underestimate that. Often the very best thing, the most holy thing, the most helpful thing, the most healing thing you can do is just show up. Or as someone has said, just show up and shut up. Just be there. Never, ever underestimate the gift of your quiet, unassuming presence. Your presence at a funeral and over the days and weeks and months following the funeral are far more valuable than anything you will say. There is power and there's comfort in simply showing up and listening to a person give voice to their grief. I don't know if you know this or not, but the truth is most people process grief through talking. Thus, an invaluable gift you can give a grieving person is to just show up and listen. Listen without interrupting, without correcting, without fixing, without judging. Just show up and listen. It's an invaluable gift. Here's number two, weep. Weep. Cry. We saw in Job 2 that his friends wept with Job. We saw a couple of weeks ago in John 11 when Jesus goes to Mary and Martha and their brother had died. What does Jesus do? He weeps. Says in Romans 12:15, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. In our culture, we're tempted to think that our tears in some way add to someone's sorrow. They don't. The reality is when we cry with a grieving person, we demonstrate to that grieving person that we feel their pain and they are not alone. And let me also say this, because this often happens. You have a grieving person and the person's grieving and you start talking about the loved one that they're grieving over and they start to cry. And what do you feel? You feel almost like guilt that you made them cry. And you say, I'm sorry I made you cry. You don't need to do that. What's happened is, in your conversation, you brought to the surface what was there and needed to be released. When you speak to a grieving person about someone who has died and they begin to cry, what you have done is you've given that person permission and an opportunity to release some of the sadness that was there under the surface. You don't need to apologize for that. What you need to do is be with them and their tears. Here's the third thing, take action. As I said earlier, a grieving person is unlikely to call if they need something. They don't have the clarity or the energy to do it. Plus, nobody wants to call somebody to come over and mow their lawn or clean their dirty dishes or clean their dirty laundry. Nobody likes to be needy. You just need to take action. If you don't know the person really well and you know they're grieving, maybe give them a call and get their permission and say, here is specifically what I'd like to do for you. I'll be over this afternoon to do it. If you know the person really well, just do it. If one of our neighbors was to die, we know our neighbors really well, and their grass needed cutting, I wouldn't ask permission. I would just go do it. Or maybe you can drop something off at the door anonymously. One grieving person said this, one of the kindest things that a person did for me after my father's death was to drop off a basket of homemade muffins at my door without knocking. And a side note is this, don't become a burden or a nuisance to a grieving person or a grieving family. Have some social EQ. And if you don't know what social EQ is, go Google it because you're going to need some. Here's another thing. This is something you can say to somebody. It's been 2 months. I'm coming over with coffee. Not I'm coming over for coffee. I'm coming over with coffee. God did not design us to journey alone. says in 1 Corinthians 12:26, if one member suffers, all suffer together. We're a family. We're a community of faith. And we need to be in it together. And there's people with different gifts in this community, and we work together to support people in their times of trouble. And it's very important for us to remember that the hardest time for a grieving person is not before the funeral or even the day of the funeral. It's after the funeral. When life goes back to normal for everyone else but the grieving person, life will never be normal for them again. And so it's important for them to know that people are remembering them, are caring for them. One person has said this: grief is incredibly, relentlessly lonely. Thus checking in, bringing them coffee, having a meal with them, lets a grieving person know that people have not forgotten, that they're on the radar. And I've got to admit very transparently, this is not my strong point. I'm really good at the before care and the day of care, and then because of my personality and responsibilities, I just get back at it. And that's why I'm so glad in this community of faith, there are other people who pick up where I'm weak and come alongside and care for those who are grieving. It is so necessary. Here's the fifth thing, and I probably wouldn't have said this a few years ago, but it's this: hit the like button. As I mentioned, when you've lost someone you love, you have a hard time understanding how the earth can keep spinning. I have coffee with people who are grieving, and they go, everybody else's life is normal. I go into a coffee shop, everybody's having coffee. I go on Facebook, everybody's posting about these wonderful things, and I'm shattered. A grieving person wants the world to stop and take notice. And that's what happens, or that's what they want to have happen, when they post on social media. When a grieving person posts on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or whatever about the loved one they've lost, it's an invitation for the world to stop, at least for a moment, and to remember and to be sad with them. Someone said, posting on social media is grief in the search of companionship. The grieving person needs to hear the dings and see the comments. And so if you're on social media, one of the social media platforms, and you see someone you know has posted about a loved one they've lost, take a moment, press like, write a comment. It's a way to journey with them. Here's the sixth thing. Can I pray for you? You know, we all do this, right? Someone comes up to you with a problem or something, and they'll share their heart with you, and you'll say, I'll pray for you. And I'm guessing 80 to 90% of the time that doesn't happen. But here's something we can do. We can pray for the grieving with the grieving. We can pray for the person on the spot. If you know someone's grieving, why not take a moment and pray for them? In the church hallway, in the grocery store aisle, or wherever you encounter that person, stop and put your hand on their shoulder and just pray for them in public. Your willingness to pray for someone in the moment will create a holy moment of genuine caring. You know, as I journey throughout the city, I see people in public places, coffee shops, grocery stores, and other, and I know they're hurting, and I'll interact with them, and I'll say to them right in that public place, can I just pray for you? And I'll put my arm on their, and my hand on their shoulder, and I'll pray for them. I pray quietly. I'm not, like, yelling, but I pray for them. I've never had someone say, no, I feel uncomfortable having you pray for me in public. Most people are touched when someone else says, I realize you're struggling, and can I pray for you right now? Can I pray for God's comfort and healing in your life right now? That's a huge thing we can do for people who are going through dark valleys. And here's the last thing, and then we'll take communion together. And it's share Jesus. Know this, I don't know if you know this or not, but grieving people often wrestle with their faith during times of mourning. That's normal, and it's okay. But please, please don't short-circuit their grief or their questions with cheap, cliche answers about the deep questions of life. Instead, when the tough questions arrive, just put your arm around them and say, I don't know what's happening here, but here's what I do know. God is with you in this grief. God's heart breaks with yours. Gently help them re-anchor their soul, which I talked about a couple of weeks ago, by pointing them to the God who is with them in their grief, by reminding them there is one who is the resurrection and the life. Point them to hope.